recognizing the major role played by difference of opinion and conflicting ideologies in today's public affairs locally and nationally, our premise is the exposure of both sides of current questions and issues. It is the purpose of this program to provide listeners with reliable facts and informed opinion relating to the issues at hand so that they can seek fully considered personal conclusions on these issues. The opinions heard on the program are qualified, but not necessarily representative of the opinions of this station. Now, the moderator of Forum 850, Joe Dannery.
Our guests on Forum 850 this evening are Mr. Earl J. Neff, lecturer and authority on unidentified flying objects, a member of NICAP and APRO. And also with us this evening on our Forum 850 program is Elmer Schutt, the treasurer of the Cleveland Ufology Project. Our program tonight, as you can well imagine from the titles that these two gentlemen bear, relates to unidentified flying objects. And as we have noted through newspaper and radio and television accounts, there has been a great wave of sightings of these unidentified flying objects over the past couple of weeks, Earl. What is your comment and reaction to this fact, and attach any significance to it?
I very definitely attach a great deal of significance to it. In the first place, we refer to what has been happening recently as a flap. It's a time when many UFOs are seen. Within the past few weeks, the highly qualified observers who have been reporting these all over the globe, I mean aviators, astronomers, meteorologists, scientists, and so forth, these men are reporting them. They are UFOs, they're unidentified flying objects, and this has been one of the biggest flaps ever to have been recorded.
What is meant by a UFO flap?
UFO, of course, means unidentified flying object, and this means that any object that cannot be identified by our Air Force or whoever is in the authority to observe them. The flap is the great number that are seen.
Elmer, you attach any significance to this current wave of sightings, and if so, what significance do you attach to them?
Oh, I believe that through the years, we find that the number of UFOs that have been appearing in the United States here have multiplied, so that we now have the UFOs coming in closer and in certain circumstances landing. I believe what they're doing are surveying the terrain and to find out exactly what plan we have in mind through some of the experimentations that are being made.
The recent Mariner probe preceded this recent wave of UFO sightings.
And whenever
do you find any relation there, Earl?
Well, whenever Mars is in opposition to our Earth, we have many more sightings. This is every 26 months. But our Mariner shot may also have been a contributing factor in the increase of sightings that have recently been reported. The moon, as everyone knows, I think, is going to be the first place where we will have our astronauts stop and make a base prior to going into space. And therefore, it's reasonable to assume that creatures coming here from other planets may use this and Mars also as a base.
The moon and Mariner probes, to all apparent purposes, show that the two planets are uninhabitable, at least by our physical and physiological standards, would be uninhabitable by man. You feel it's conceivable that this could be a stopping off point or a base for other creatures. Elmer?
Well, I believe that due to the pattern that we were going to follow here in our exploration of Mars, we also stated that we would probably use either Phobos or Deimos as a landing place in order to survey the planet of Mars for a better reception in case we would probably land there in by a living person. As for the life on Mars and Venus, this is very questionable. No one has as yet said there is no evidence of life on Mars or Venus. They just said that the pictures showed and radio signals showed that there is a non-existent life, excepting that if we were to examine any of the photos taken of the Earth, taken from a altitude of probably 140 to 170 miles, we ourselves would say, is there any life on Earth?
Mm. What evidence, Earl, is there that these things are actually guided by some kind of intelligent being? Why do you feel so strongly that unidentified flying objects are controlled by some being from outer space?
If they are very small, as many of them were during World War II when they were referred to as Foo Fighters, F-O-O, fighters, these were objects seen by the thousands, and planes, our planes and the British and the others, were flying through them, though never hitting them. These objects were only 3 inches in diameter and about an inch in height. Naturally, unless it's controlled by an amoeba, it would hardly be conceivable that these are occupied. They probably are under remote control. Now, the larger ones, they go up to 8 inches, 12 inches, 15 feet, 30 feet, 150 feet, 350 feet. The largest one I've heard of recently, March the 8th of this year, was over Japan. That was 2,200 feet in, estimated by the Japanese flyers who were flying the Flying Tigers. Well, if these objects are not under intelligent control, they are doing something very unbelievable, because when the Flying Tiger, and even back in the earlier days of Kenneth Arnold and so forth, these objects were doing things that only intelligent control seemingly could make them perform in this way. They can loop a plane, they can come toward it, and the last split instant either go up or down without hitting the object. And recently, in the case of the Flying Tiger, every move that the pilot and the co-pilot were making, this was duplicating it.
Elmer, what are your reactions to this?
Well, my reactions, Joe, are the fact that in several instances where their aircraft were flying close to these unidentified flying objects, they managed to diverge or part themselves from the line of flight. But the most interesting part of it is that in several cases where UFOs had been seen, lights had been shown on them by flashlights and so on, and they replied in return.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if there is nothing, a solid object approaching them, and they might be able to dodge them, in the case of a light, all we would have would be rays of light, whereas there wouldn't be any indication of a solid object there. If they were able to reply in return, then there must be intelligent life on these objects.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, Earl, you suggested or advanced a belief that Mars and Moon may be used as a base for these unidentified flying objects. Where do you believe the UFOs would originate from originally?
Well, I don't believe, as General Twining one time stated, that he thinks they come from Mars. President Eisenhower said he believes they come from many other planets. Dr. Hermann Oberth, whom I had the pleasure of meeting some time ago when he was in this country, stated that he thought they came from Alpha Centauri area. Well, now, maybe they're from that place. Maybe they're from Epsilon Eridani or Tau Ceti. These are the stars that astronomers have selected as being ideal for solar systems. Now, if Einstein's time dilation theory is correct, then the UFOs, traveling at nearly the speed of light, could conceivably cross this void in space in a matter of years, or perhaps even shorter time. But again, it's all conjecture on our part. Nobody knows where they are from.
Hmm. I notice in these reports of this latest wave of UFOs that it's concentrated more or less in the southwestern part of the United States. How do you account for this?
Years ago, they were seen primarily in rural areas, places where hardly a soul saw them. They'd be seen in parts of Europe. They'd be seen in parts of Australia, in South America, and so forth. But then later, Every capital city of every country in the world had UFOs over it. Then they seemed to follow a pattern of going above the military installations. I recall a Look magazine article back in 1952. This was a fine photograph of a relief map, and on every, over and above every military installation was a little symbol indicating a UFO. At that particular time, they seemed to have been having our military installations under surveillance. Now, recently, the large industrial cities are the ones that seem to be more receiving more of the sightings. Florida is high on the list as a state. California is very high, and Ohio also rates about third in number of sightings.
Does Cleveland itself have many sightings of the Cleveland area?
I'm very glad you asked that, because so many people in the Cleveland area think that we don't get very many sightings. This is absolutely untrue. In 1963, we had 5+ good reported sightings at our report center per month on the average. Now, in 1964, we had 7+ per month good sightings in the greater Cleveland area. And so far this year, we have had more sightings than all of last year.
Suppose I saw a UFO. What would you advise me to do about it?
Well, first of all, I'd suggest you call WJW. And then I think after that, I would call the Report Center. This is the Cleveland Ufology Project UFO Report Center. It's 234-0861. 234-0861. And then also, it would be an excellent idea to write to NICAP or write to APRO. Now, NICAP is the National Investigations Committee on Air Phenomena, headed by Major Donald E. Kehoe and Richard Hall. And they're at 1536 Connecticut Avenue, Northwest. That's Washington 3060C. And APRO, the oldest organization, NICAP is the largest, and APRO is the oldest organization. That's located at 4145 East Desert Place in Tucson. But I think that the best thing to do is to report it to the radio stations, the television stations, and the report centers. The newspapers sometimes cover it, and in one case, a party last year called one of our leading papers, and they said, well, we're not interested because our editor is not concerned.
Hmm. Maybe we might get into some of the technical aspects of the UFOs. I think Elmer Schutt is a little more technically inclined with respect to the flight patterns of UFOs. And, Elmer, do you denote any particular sequence to the light patterns? Are there any unusual flight patterns connected with these flights and sightings?
Generally, in the light patterns, we find that in several of the lighting arrangements, we find that in the later light patterns, we find a red light surrounded by three or four white lights. And in certain cases, this will change from the red and white to a green light. And from the green light, it will then turn to a blue. Now, this is probably their cruising lights, because actually the luminescence from the UFOs themselves, due to the, I believe myself, the speed of travel, generally goes through the corona of the red, blues, and greens, and yellows, and whites, due to the speed that they are traveling. In the flight patterns, what is generally known as a general UFO pattern is the falling leaf pattern, where it generally comes down in a side swooping motion from side to side. And this is generally noted when the UFO is coming across very slowly. One of the most interesting patterns, and has been observed by myself and other people, is probably an echelon of UFOs coming over at a terrifically high speed and without any hesitance making a 90-degree turn in the air without slowing down. Conventional aircraft cannot do this unless they make a radius turn.
Isn't this all beyond our physics, though, Earl? Or are there any authorities or competent physicists who would subscribe to the ability of these objects in performing these fantastic feats?
More and more of our physicists and scientists are swinging around slowly but surely. A friend of mine, not too long ago, a physicist stated that we would perhaps have to forget all the physics we ever knew and learn entirely new before we could do what these creatures were doing or these objects were doing. Walter Webb from the Charles Hayden Planetarium up in Boston is one of our special advisors for NICAP and a man who strongly believes. But we could name dozens of them. Frank Salisbury is the Colorado State University outstanding exobiologist. Fred Whipple's another man who's very, very pro on this subject. He's the director of the Smithsonian Astrophysical Observatory. And my very good friend, Charles Maney, Professor Maney, the astrophysicist of Professor Emeritus of Defiance College, is not only a strong believer, he's one of the board members of NICAP and EFRO. And then there's Professor Clyde Tombaugh, the discoverer, the only man who has discovered a planet during our lifetime. He discovered planet Pluto. And he and his wife and mother-in-law were sitting in their backyard in New Mexico some years ago. He had his own private telescope, and while he was looking at the moon, they discovered some UFOs crossing between where they were and the moon. Now, there's Dr. Menzel of Harvard who says these things don't exist. They're hallucinations, they're weather inversions, they're temperature inversions, and so forth. But although he has gone along seemingly most times with the Air Force's statements that they don't exist, still, recently, the Air Force came out and stated that 663 unexplained sightings have been reported to them. So he is one of the exceptions to the rule, I would say, at the present time.
Why would the Air Force constantly take the negative approach to these sightings? They're natural phenomena, hallucinations, the planets, Jupiter, Mars, or...
Well, recently, of course, they've again come out with their usual line that Jupiter was doing some unusual things. Frankly, I think that the planets stay up in their proper positions, and I don't think they come swooping down near an airstrip. But one of the things that I think is bothering them is there's no known defense against a UFO. Three times SAC bombers went out after them thinking they were Russian bombers, and three times they came back after they learned they were UFOs. Just what the reason for all this secrecy is hard to say, but on two occasions we do know that the Pentagon had planned to make it known to the public, and at the last minute they stopped. I received a letter today through a friend of mine. This is a letter that he had received just about a year ago, but it's interesting to me because it's from the Public Information Division of the Office of Information in Washington and written by Major Maston Jacks himself. And in here he states that, unfortunately, speaking of the Air Force, unfortunately we are not able to duplicate what few photographs the Air Force has in its possession in the realm of UFOs because of the cost, and more importantly, because the only photographs we have are hoax materials, such as pictures of flying automobile hubcaps, cigar humidor lids with ping pong balls attached, chicken brooders, light fixtures, water spots on negatives, etc. Well, now, I can't quite go along and believe this is true because I do know that every major investigation that the Air Force is responsible for investigating these UFOs costs the taxpayers $10,000. And I don't think they're going to be quite that wasteful and just come up with humidor pictures. This is rather hard to imagine.
Elmer, I'd like to know, in view of this, the attitude of the Air Force and their general pattern of downgrading these sightings and attaching the significance that you do to them, why do you persist in your attempts to dwell on this UFO subject? Why do you feel that you should continue to press for adoption of your view as to UFOs?
Well, I believe this way. Apparently there is some semblance of a intelligentsia up there because in the many years that we have experimented with what I call our Chinese skyrockets, we haven't been able to get anything to lift off from the ground and travel at terrifically high speeds to hover, to change direction, to reverse its course. The apparent material in this these UFOs are such that I believe that we probably could learn a lot from obtaining some of the material. The propulsion of these UFOs is something that we would very much like to attain because of the ease of travel. I believe that there is something to this story and the fact that there are UFOs because I believe that the multitude of people that report them are such that not everyone can be suffering from hallucinations, and I believe that if everyone did report what they saw, we would have 10 times the amount of reportings that we have now.
Have you ever saw a UFO?
I've had 9 sightings.
Mm-hmm. And what makes you believe that they were machines under the control of intelligent beings?
Well, I go through a mental list of eliminations. First, I see that it is not a satellite because I generally check satellite travel directions. I try to simulate the speed of an aircraft and look for identifying flight pattern lights. Any actions that are such that cannot be duplicated by our known aircraft now. The proximity of distance from the ground, any unusual lights, because even they say they might be weather balloons. I've never seen a weather balloon change in color. Generally, there's a flashlight below to identify it for a flying aircraft, but the balloon itself does not light up because it looked to me actually like a lead disc, because I would say that the approximate distance that I saw it was probably about 2 miles away from me, but it was low on the horizon.
Mm-hmm.
No colors connected with it.
Earl Nethcott, what motivates you in this line of endeavor?
When I was a youngster, my mother taught me quite a bit about the sky, and I just never believed that we on this planet could possibly be alone. Then recently, when I met the author of We Are Not Alone, Walter Sullivan, the editor, science editor for the New York Times, I commented to him about this. But it just seems very egotistical to think that of all of the planets, of all of the solar systems, of all of the galaxies, and there's 100 billion galaxies that we know of today, where a few years back we thought of one galaxy. Why should this little speck in the scheme of things be the one and only inhabited? And then back in August 18th of 1961, with 8 of my neighbors and one a very great non-believer in UFOs, we saw one go over our rooftops on Pleasant Valley Road in Parma that was positively immense. This was in the daytime at 4:20 in the afternoon, and a beautiful, big, elliptical silver object, no sound, no jet trail, apparent means of motivation, but going faster than anything I'd ever seen in the sky, and behind it was a jet going at a 45-degree angle to it, but it, in comparison, seemed to be standing still.
What do astronomers have to say on this subject? Have UFOs ever been viewed through a telescope or magnified?
Yes, but not too frequently. It's as though you were looking through a pipe, you might say, and expecting out there in space to see a UFO. After all, you have the entire heavens. I'd prefer to have my own 10-power binoculars than I would a big scope, because it's as if we were having a camera in our hands and focusing it for infinity and then trying to take a portrait of maybe your finger in front of the lens. It's next to impossible to see a UFO through a scope. If it's very accommodating and obliging and hovering for a great length of time and you can focus on it, and if it's not, if it's very, very far away, then you're fortunate. But this is not too often the case. However, among the scientists, recently we felt very fortunate that a man by the name of Jacques Vallée was the first to write an entire book on the UFO, taking the pro stand. This is a fine book that's just recently come out on the market called Anatomy of a Phenomena. And I think this is very unusual for a scientist to take this stand, because prior to him, his writing this entire book, I know of only one man, Amy Michel, scientifically minded, wrote about orthophony and the straight line mystery, because these objects over space do travel in straight lines.
Mm-hmm. With respect to some of the physical characteristics of these UFOs, Elmer Schutt, what type of physical characteristics seem to prevail over the current round of sightings in the Southwest? And what type of shapes and characteristics, what is the gamut of shapes with respect to UFOs?
There are 39 known shapes of UFOs, but in generality, the shapes that have been persistent in the Southwest have been, let's say, the disc shape. From reported media, news media, they say that they look flattened on the top and bottom with a double ring around them. Now, this is one of the particular type that they commonly associate with the flying saucer type. There are many flying saucer types. By this, I mean that they are elliptical, top and bottom. Some have small domes on top. Some have domes on the bottom. But I will say this, that the actual persistence of the type in the Southwest is generally the flying saucer or flattened disc type.
Has one certain UFO been observed in two areas at the same time? Say one person in one state would say that he saw this object in the sky. Has there been any verification with respect to that particular object from someone else, maybe perhaps in another state?
There was one real, we call it a phenomenal sighting. I believe, if Earl will back me up, there was one in the western skies, I believe around the state of Washington and California, where this object was so huge that, as they call it, was almost a second sun.
You're referring to the one a few years ago, or the one back in the 1800s?
The one a few years ago.
Oh, yes.
Where this was observed not only from the state of Washington, but from the state of California and from distances as far away as 150, 200 miles. This must have been exceedingly large, but no estimation of size due to the general distance from the public viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. I know, according to a report of 2 days ago, that a weather observatory or a meteorological station where forecasters noted these blips on their radar. As far as I know, there has been no explanation of this. Earl, perhaps you might have some later information with respect to this.
Yes, I'm glad it was on radar, because you will not get a planet on radar. Therefore, it's ridiculous for the Air Force or any government agency to come out and say, well, what you saw was Jupiter or Venus, because they just don't register on radar. Now, the objects that have been seen recently, as I earlier mentioned this evening, have been seen by very qualified personnel. Down at the South Pole, the men who saw them down there recently, these scientists not only saw them, they described them as lens-shaped. In other words, it's a beautiful description, a convex-convex object, describing one particular type, and when it made tight turns, when it hovered, when it did these unusual things, changed colors. This cannot possibly be a case of mass hallucination. And also, they took a photograph of it. Well, the photograph may not be too good. It'll take about 8 months for them to get it back into civilization for people to see it. But then when you think that coming from Newfoundland down to the Azores, we have planes flying back and forth there patrolling. And the men who see these saw these objects recently are good veteran pilots. They are meteorologists. These men rule out weather balloons. They rule out temperature inversions. And when, as Arthur Godfrey recently mentioned, one was right off of his right wingtip, and his co-pilot along with Arthur saw this, the field said, well, we don't see anything. But they said, well, we certainly do see it, and we know what we're seeing. Also, when collisions have taken place, these are not planets getting out of their orbits.
Mm-hmm. If I'm correct, I recently saw a report that suggested that one of our astronauts might have seen unidentified flying objects. Is there anything to that?
Nick Devitt did not only, well, he caught it on a camera. In fact, I have a reproduction of the picture, and it was like a sphere with sort of a point coming from it. This more or less resembled the object seen many years ago by Ralph Mayer, who at that time was with in the Marines, but later was connected with one of the large television studios here in town. And that same object that he saw that night was seen, probably the same object, because it resembled it in shape and size, a few nights later in another part of the United States. Even when I spoke with Joe Walker some while back, I was talking to him. He is the X-15 pilot, as you probably remember, Joe. He had shot some pictures out of his with his gun camera out of his plane, and this was publicized in the European papers, but touched very lightly upon in this country. There are definitely times when things like this are seen and are not explained. When Cooper was up, they tried to explain that this was ice coming off and so forth. But if this is coming off of a capsule, it wouldn't be going in the opposite direction.
If security is so strict by the Air Force, how do you account for the fact that these, apparently, or to me, what might be sensational sightings, are common knowledge?
They do leak through sometimes. I think I was the first person perhaps to mention on the airwaves back in December, the 21st to be exact, with Major Kehoe, the fact that the Gemini two-man experimental capsule, after it left the launching pad at Cape Kennedy on April of last year, was followed almost immediately after leaving the launching pad, was followed by four UFOs. Well, now, this wasn't just for a few moments. This was one complete orbit of the Earth. And two of the UFOs were above the capsule, one below it, and one behind it. And after they apparently had learned what they were here for, they zoomed off into space again from where they had come. But this is factual information. Well, the way we get this information, we wouldn't dare report how we got it. But it is absolutely authenticated.
Was this information communicated to ground stations by the astronaut?
This was an experimental capsule. There were no astronauts in it.
See.
But in True Magazine of January 1965, the whole story appeared. You could check this at the library now. It's a fine story. But we came out with it on the 21st of December.
How do you account for the fact, Elmer Schutt, that the Air Force is so adamant in confessing that there is some question as to whether these UFOs are vehicles from another planet?
I do believe that the Air Force actually does expend an awful lot of money. As I have heard that they spend almost $6 to $9 million a year on the investigations of these, as we call them, UFOs. I think that they'd receive a multitude of calls. They do not want to commit themselves to the fact that there are UFOs, probably because of the fact that they don't wish to excite the public. They did publish at one time a book which said that they had reasons to believe that if they had published any information out of the existence of UFOs, it might lead to the downfall of the nation, lead to mass suicides, lead to destruction of religion. This, to me, is another excuse for saying that they do not have an adequate defense, and therefore they don't wish to admit this fact to the public, so they ignore completely most of the calls.
Earl Neff, do you think there's any danger that's associated with UFOs?
Some years ago, Captain Mantell was the first to chase one of these objects. He was a veteran flyer, and he kept saying, well, I'm getting trying to get closer, but the object seems to stay a certain distance away and so forth. Well, finally, his plane crashed, and later they stated that the pilot was chasing the planet Venus. Well, now, I happen to have a friend who was down there at the time. He was in intelligence at the time for the Air Force. And he said, don't tell me that Captain Mantell didn't know the difference between Venus and UFO. But there was a case over Lake Superior some years ago where we believe a very large $3 million jet was actually kidnapped by a UFO. Well, now you say this sounds fantastic. But then it's not so fantastic when you realize that some of these mothership or mothercraft or interplanetary craft, the cigar-shaped objects, can release and take back into the craft five or six very large UFOs. And those are perhaps more saucer-shaped, 150 feet or whatever diameter. So that it's again, conjecture on our part, but we feel that perhaps the first thing they do is stall the engine. Now, many times planes have had their engines stalled. Many times autos have had their engines stalled. There's electromagnetic force fields around these objects. There's ionized air around these objects. And probably they first stall the engines, and then, again, this is a guess on our part, they probably then act as a magnet sucking it in. But this was known as the famous Kinross case. It's now called Kinchula Air Force Base up there in near the Sault Ste. Marie. And these two pilots who went out in this big jet to intercept the UFO were in radio communication with the base. But at the very moment when both visually and on radar, the two objects merged, or on radar, the two blips merged, all communication then stopped. From that time on, nothing has ever been heard from the two pilots, nor from the plane. The Air Force in this country claimed that it was a Canadian plane that had been there. The Canadian government stated definitely they had no plane in that area. There were hours and hours of search by other planes made of that area of Lake Superior. Not one particle of debris was ever found. Not an oil slick was found. It was a complete disappearance. And so we do feel that there is danger connected with it, and not only that way, but if you get too close to one, you could conceivably be burned by the radiation.
Do you feel that there is some kind of a showdown looming with respect to the inquisitiveness of the population, of the U.S. average citizen with the Air Force and the government as to some kind of definitive statement on these UFOs?
I think the American people are not as gullible as some of the groups in this country believe, in the military, but I feel that with the airing of subjects like this on the air, and I do mean that the radio stations and television stations have been far better about it than the newspapers have as a whole throughout the country. And this is finally, I believe, making an impression upon the public, and probably in this way it'll eventually break. As you asked before about the clergy and so forth, true, some theologians probably have been steering clear of it, thinking they have plenty to talk about without talking about this too. However, when certain individuals have come forth from the clergy and said, we have seen one of these as late as last week in one of the large papers in the country, the Jesuit priest from Buenos Aires stated he had seen one in our own town. A Lutheran preacher has seen one right crossing Lee Road and wasn't afraid to say so. These men are to be counted. I do believe that NICAP, in his hard effort to make this known to the public through hopefully getting open hearings and investigation of the Air Force, is getting closer to the point. But maybe I'm a bit too optimistic.
Well, what medical or metaphysical implications do you think there are, Elmer Schett?
Well, metaphysical, this is very questionable because there is no actual proof as to what forms of metaphysical forces can be controlled. I will say that probably human eyesight and mind sometimes can play tricks, but I will offset that by saying that in the Cleveland Ufology Project, we are definitely trying to waylay any metaphysical forces or desires by actually trying to obtain the use of electronic instruments for detecting the closeness or proximity of UFOs. In fact, one of the strangest parts of it is that the use of FM radio and the electronic magnetic detector for signal strength can probably give you an indication that there are something near. But one of the easiest and the simplest things to give you an indication that a UFO is near, and if it is a UFO sending out electromagnetic forces, is a common, ordinary $1 compass.
Merle, what can we look for, since these sightings are of cyclic nature, I believe,
every
this period, in view of the increased activity in space ventures here on Earth?
I would state that I would think that as we go on, we'll have more and more sightings. If you want to take the word of a woman who has been predicting and coming very accurate in her predictions, I'm referring to Jean Dixon. She said by the year 2000, she told me this personally, by the year 2000, everybody will know about them. But I think that long before the year 2000, we'll know much, much more about them.
Final comment from you, Elmer Schutt?
Well, in regards to the amount of sightings that were probably held in the Cleveland area, may I respectfully say that we had a very impressive flap in the Cleveland area here on the 12th, 13th, 14th, and 15th, where the Cleveland Ufology Project reports on their number, which is 2340861, had 49 reports mailed back to them. Out of a possible, I believe, 55 that were mailed out. And these were telephone calls that were brought in. And thanks to the radio stations, the television stations, and also the newspaper and telephone companies for directing the people to this number.
Mm-hmm. We'd like to thank you very much for being with us this evening. Once again, we'll review our panel for you. Earl J. Neff, lecturer and authority on unidentified flying objects, a member of NICAP and APRO. And also with us this evening, Elmer Schutt, the treasurer of the Cleveland Ufology Project. We invite you to join us again next week at the same time for another Forum 850 program.
And issues most closely associated with the important affairs of our nation and our community. Varying views on matters of current public interest are regularly broadcast by WJW Radio as a service in making today's news more interesting and meaningful. The opinions heard are qualified, but do not necessarily represent the views of this station.